had a socially distant picnic in Central Park as our first like in-person date. And that really is where it all began. To do in vitro wasn't going to be covered. It became clear that that was just not going to be a financial option for us, unfortunately.
Genetics isn't always black and white, and the emotions and decisions surrounding genetics and genetic testing can be even more complex. Welcome to Patient Stories with Gray Genetics. I'm Eleanor Griffith, certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service. It seems like there are constantly headlines in the news about genetics, but few news stories focus on the patient experience. At Gray Genetics, we are collecting patient stories, your stories. Every other Tuesday, we bring you a patient story related to genetics.
Okay, do we want to try to have children naturally and see what happens?
Today, I'm interviewing Melanie Breaux-Kirschen. Melanie is a social justice communicator. She also has Lynch syndrome. Her day job involves running communications and partnerships for a national criminal justice nonprofit. And in her spare time, she does marketing work for small businesses. When she can, she writes about women's health and reproductive justice. Melanie was the first person I interviewed for the Patient Stories podcast in April 2018. She was 29 years old at the time and had received a diagnosis of Lynch syndrome just before turning 25. You can find a link to that first interview in the show notes for this episode. Today, Melanie is 35, recently married, and 28 weeks pregnant.
So, Melanie, it's so good to talk to you again.
It's so good to talk to you, too. It's been so long.
It has. And you were my first interview for the Patient Stories podcast, and now you're actually the first guest that I'm interviewing for this next chapter episode, and I have the same since I've been out of this for a few years. So,
this full circle moment.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah. And it's, so I'm really interested in, you know, adding on interviews, but also going back and seeing like how genetic conditions affect people and affect people's perspective at different phases in their life. And when I reached out to you, it was kind of perfect because you told me that you're actually currently, what is it, 28 weeks pregnant now?
Yep. 28 weeks.
Congratulations.
Some of the stuff. But what were you going to say?
Yeah. Okay. So I was just going to start with that. So when I think we both listened again to the interview that we did in 2018. So at that time you were 29 years old and you were dating and talking about sharing your diagnosis during dating and also talking about kind of coming to a place of just thinking professionally, like you needed to have a job with health insurance as opposed to doing like freelance work that you'd really enjoyed. So how have things changed for you now? Now you're 35, is that right?
Yeah, now I'm 35. I got married in May last year, and we are now expecting a baby in May of this year. A lot has changed since the last time we talked. And really, a lot of what's happened to me recently. When did I meet him? I think I met him only a few years ago in 2021, in the middle of the pandemic, actually. And the pandemic was, you know, really a really difficult time for so many people. And I definitely felt the loneliness aspect of it. I was living in Brooklyn with a roommate at the time, and eventually circumstances changed and I was able to move into my own place at the beginning of 2021 in Brooklyn still. And it was the first time that I felt a little bit more comfortable to start dating again. I had stopped dating because of the pandemic, as a lot of people did. I wasn't really, you know, seeing anybody, having any kind of interactions with people besides, immediate friends or things like that. But I had tested positive for COVID toward the end of 2020 and then went through a quarantine period and all that. And so I felt a little bit more comfortable with the possibility of opening myself up to dating again and seeing people again when that was over. And then also when I lived alone, so I wasn't going to impact anybody else on my decision to like interact with the world. Mm-hmm. And so I went back on the dating apps and met this guy who was really sweet, who's originally from Turkey. And we just really hit it off. Our first date was a video date. I believe our second date was also a video date. And then we had a socially distant picnic in Central Park as our first like in-person date. And that really is where it all began. And I felt, in the last time we talked, I talked a lot about my genetic condition and dating and things like that. And I ultimately decided to bring it up with him fairly quickly. I felt very comfortable with him, and so it felt okay to bring it up. And he had a great response. He asked more questions. He was very curious about it. He was concerned about how it affected me personally. And so I kind of went through things. Another kind of funny aspect of our relationship is my regularly, so as part of Lynch syndrome, as I've talked about before, and then also folks who listen might have an idea about this, I have to get a series of annual screenings every year, which I have thankfully been on top of and doing really well at. And one of them is an annual colonoscopy, which anybody who's experienced it before is not exactly the most fun thing. And it's also not the sexiest thing ever. So I had one scheduled, I'd say within the first 3 months of my now husband and I dating. And I told him about it. And he was like, can I be there for you? Can I take you to your appointment? Can I pick you, be your person to pick you up at the hospital? He was with me in my very small Brooklyn apartment while I was going through the prep that you have to go through, which is like, again, like I said, not a sexy experience, but he was there with me to watch movies and kind of make the best of that situation. And then he took me to the hospital in the morning and waited as I got my procedure done, and then took me home. And it really was such a beautiful moment because I had never had someone do that. Yeah. And then I would say, I decided to move in with him in Jersey City, which is where he lived at the time and where we live together now. I believe at the end of that year. And so we started living together at the very beginning. And we've talked about health stuff as well. We've talked about things like have kids and the medical decisions that I'm going to have to make in the future. My husband has always made me feel like we'll make these decisions together. It's clear that he still has a hard time like understanding, and that might be a little bit of a language barrier. But he is always very curious about it and very much wants me to make whatever decision is best for me. And so it's been really, really nice to have such a supportive partner in this. And it also made vision and decision making around how we wanted to have kids less of a painful process than I originally had thought. 29 and the last time we talked about this. So that's been really good. And I can talk a little bit more about like what our thought process was, but I'll like pause for a hot second.
Yeah. What do you mean that it was less of a painful process than you thought it would be when you didn't know who your partner would be, when it was more hypothetical?
Well, I assumed that it would be which it is in a lot of ways, it's a difficult decision to make. And what I mean by that is really deciding how you want to have kids. The decision to have kids, I think, is in and of itself also a very big decision and very life-changing, all of that. And I had always been a person who I probably wouldn't have wanted to have kids if I didn't have a partner, just because the process of being pregnant and the process of raising children just seemed like such an intense, daunting task that if I didn't end up with a partner, it might be something that I wouldn't have considered. But I had always wanted to have kids. And so mm-hmm. when my husband and I got together, it was very clear with him from the beginning that, like, hey, you know, I'm in this for the long haul. Like, whatever relationship I get into next, I would really one day like to get married and have children. And he was very upfront about that too, that that's what he was interested in. And so we kind of got that big decision out of the way. And then when we talked about the options, we ended up deciding to meet with a fertility specialist who works with Lynch patients, and that a friend of mine actually had suggested, because she's a Turkish doctor. And so there was an element of like, oh, that's really great. Like someone who could probably explain some things to my husband in a way that he might be able to better understand than I could explain to him.
Do you exclusively speak in English, or you don't know a little bit of Turkish, or maybe now you do?
Yeah, I know a tiny bit of Turkish now, but we exclusively speak in English. And his English is great. He's like very fluent. He's been here since his like early 20s. So there's not necessarily a problem with that, but there is, you know, like with major medical stuff, there's usually like a lot of vocabulary and language that like even hearing it in English is hard to like know what it is, mm-hmm. let alone hearing it in a second language.
Yeah.
So it felt a little cosmic that this doctor happened to also be Turkish and from the same hometown that my husband is from. So that was also like a cool thing we discovered.
Yeah.
And so we talked to her and really talked about what our options were if we wanted to try to eliminate the mutation from any embryos. That's essentially the way that she explained it to us, was we could go through the process of in vitro, take some of your eggs, take a sample from him, mix them together, and then create embryos, and then see which ones are affected with the mutation, and then take the other ones and implant them. It is essentially like the process. So we decided to do some initial screenings to figure out if there were any other genetic abnormalities that we needed to be concerned about on his end or my end. And also during that time, I went back to my insurance, and the doctor helped me kind of talk to my insurance company as well to figure out exactly what was going to be covered. And we found out that we didn't have any other genetic abnormalities that we immediately needed to be concerned about, which was good. And
carrier screening you had done, probably?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And so really it was the only thing we had to worry about was Lynch. And we also looked into the insurance, and that's where things started to get a little more unfortunate. We found out that that initial screening was covered by insurance, even though it had like a copay with it. To do in vitro wasn't going to be covered. And so we went over exactly how much that was going to cost. And it became clear that that was just not going to be a financial option for us, unfortunately. And so we had to kind of make a big decision together about, okay, do we want to try to have children naturally and see what happens? And that is something that I went back and forth about a lot, because I just remember how guilty my mom felt about passing on her mutation to me, even though she didn't know that she had it when she had children. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to decide whether or not, like, I would feel the same. And to be honest, like, I'm still going through that, and I'm talking about it a lot in therapy, honestly. Because I will be having a baby, and it's actually a little girl. And I'm really excited to meet her and to raise her and to have her become part of our family. And I'm nervous my mutation or not. Mm-hmm. We also decided we did become pregnant, and we decided to check for kind of the major abnormalities, concerns like Down syndrome and things like that. We decided to get screenings for those and then see TESOS, or a more extended version of screening. And everything looked normal. My OBGYN said, I don't necessarily recommend it. Doesn't look like there are any, there's anything that I would be concerned about that would lead you to need to do that additional screening, unless you want to know definitively now whether or not she has Lynch syndrome. And as folks may or may not know, amniocentesis comes with its own, you know, risks. They're usually incredibly low, but some risks of miscarriage, etc. And so Arda and I had a conversation about, well, we could find out, but would it ultimately lead us to make any kind of major decision about our pregnancy? Meaning, if we might decide to terminate the pregnancy, if the fetus was affected with Lynch syndrome. And we really decided that no, that's not something that we would do. And so we decided after the baby is born at an appropriate time.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at with that. And that was, again, a really hard decision to come to. And it's still kind of a hard decision as I talk it out. That to me is, you know, that this baby that I'm going to have, which hopefully, again, everything goes fine, and the end of my, I give birth to be, that baby never would have existed if she does in fact have Lynch syndrome, because I wouldn't have picked her embryo. Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about. And same thing with my mom, is that she never would have picked me, if you will, if she knew that I had Lynch syndrome. So I'm kind of trying to cling to that thought for now and really see how I feel about it. To do choose to do IVF and go through all that, respect for those people. My friend did it, and I have other, you know, I know of other people who have done it, and it's such a grueling process. Folks who can and do it. My husband and I have talked about if different insurance for our second baby, because we would like to have more than one. So we're not ruling out the possibility of doing it in the future, but something else that we were also trying to weigh is that I'm 35 now, and we know that we want more than one child. And so we also felt like, okay, we could go into serious debt, and we could try to go through this IVF process, which is a very long process, can be a very long process. And it might, you know, take much pregnant, and me being older to have kids. And so we just ultimately decided that it was just best for our family and our situation, both financially and then also kind of with my age, that we wanted to, this is the path that we chose to take, and that's okay. And other folks who also make similar decisions, it's also okay. That's what I'm trying to like come to terms with, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It sounds like you've really taken it like piece by piece, one step at a time, like age, what's the next decision?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how it goes. And hopefully we get through this pregnancy well. Hopefully she doesn't have Lynch syndrome. And if she does, you know, we'll take that step by step and figure that out. I actually just had a conversation with my OBGYN about my next steps for dealing with my Lynch syndrome as well, which was him mentioning that I really should consider some preventative surgeries for after I am done having children. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about the potential for me to remove my uterus and my fallopian tubes when I'm done having children. And that's something that I already knew was a possible thing that I could do to reduce my risk of having uterine cancer. And so my husband and I talked about that as well. And it's been nice to be able to talk to him. And again, you know, he's very much like, I want to do whatever you're comfortable doing. Let's get more information. Let's also not worry about it right now. Let's just get through you having your first baby. And then after that, we can, you know, start talking about things and figuring out timelines and stuff that are good for you and my cancer risk and stuff like that. So that's been good, but it also feels like a lot of information at a very already kind of overwhelming time, right? Like for anybody who is able to get pregnant, who is in their third trimester, it's a very overwhelming time. So to have that conversation was a lot. And so I've kind of decided to like mentally table it for now, and then we can address it at a later point.
Yeah. When your OBGYN is talking to you about the surgical options, does that make you feel like when you're already thinking like, okay, ideally we would like to have two kids, that you should already be thinking about a second pregnancy before you're through with the first one?
Yes, exactly. Yes. And in fact, that was something that Arda and I talked about, was okay, when should we, you know, think about having the second baby so that it would be, you know, a good timeline for me and in relation to my cancer risk. Because my youngest relative who had uterine cancer was my aunt, or is my aunt, who developed it. I believe she was 45 or 46. And so my doctor was like, yeah, I probably would have wanted you to already maybe do something about it, but early 40s, and we should really have a serious conversation about it. Take it one day at a time. Yeah. So we'll see.
You've mentioned finding out, you know, whether or not your daughter has Lynch syndrome. You know, usually it's something that people have testing for after the age of 18. Has that been something that you've talked about too? Like, do you feel like you really want to know earlier, because this has been something that's been on your mind since before her conception? Or do you feel like once she's here, you'll be okay with waiting?
It's a really great question. I have thought about it. I don't know the answer. I would like, the type of parent that I would like to do is I would like to be honest with my kids about what's going on. I remember, granted, my mom, for example, didn't know about her until she was in her late 50s, almost early 60s. But my mom struggled with health problems kind of throughout her whole life. And there were various moments where I'd tried to hide it from my brother and me as their way of trying to protect us, which is very sweet, but they had been a little bit more forthright with what was going on. And so especially if I have to go through these various moments and times, I would think about how it was going to feel. Definitely want to know how to not scare potentially has to go through something similar, if that makes sense. So, which again could also vary because of the advancements in medical technology, right? Like there's a lot of things that are going on, which is really exciting, where some of the things that I have to deal with now, like the type of preparation I have to do for my screenings or my overall risk for cancer, or, you know, kind of are things that she may or may not ever have to deal with. Where the field goes over the next several decades. Be curious to know sooner than 18. But I think that's something that Arden and I would have to decide together. And then also, you know, maybe at a certain point, kind of decide with her about whether or not she would want to know. Because I also remember you were there the day that I found out. It was a very overwhelming, and it was a very thing to realize about yourself that can is very scary in a lot of ways, but it also, in the grand scheme of things that can be delivered to, especially in the context of my family history with cancer, it's been experience than I thought it was going to be, if that makes sense. Especially since I've been able to maintain a fairly healthy lifestyle. Things like my career, which we talked a lot about in the last review, are things that I've had to make other decisions around. But ultimately, I think that they're okay decisions. When I was younger, they were a little bit harder to deal with, but I like the idea of having a job that's still focused on social justice, that's still focused on issues and causes that I care about, but that also creates stability. As I get older, that sense of stability feels really nice. And being health insurance and to, you know, a steady paycheck and stability and things like that, it feels really good, those things. And so I don't mind them as much as I do. So, but again, you know, my daughter might feel very differently. But hopefully, you know, if she is positive and whenever we do decide to do testing for her, we can navigate that together and, you know, really think about what is important to her, what we can do as her parents to support her through it and really just be there for her in the same way that my mom and my aunt, in particular, you know, we've been able to support each other through this. And yes, would we like to not have it? Sure. But we're able to continue living fulfilling, even though we have it, as long as we are keeping ourselves things and, you know, and really taking care of ourselves.
Yeah, when I was re-listening to our first interview, I was thinking, like, and hearing you talk now, some or maybe a lot of your, I feel like the stress associated with your diagnosis when you were first learning it and you were almost 25, was just maybe being young in your time of life and also like kind of being at that phase of changing jobs or wanting to change jobs, and then just the experience you had with not always having health insurance and not having providers that you felt like you could consistently see. and then, yeah. You know, then just like switching to someone who, you know, kind of normalize the screenings for you? Have you been seeing since 2018, have you been seeing those same nurses who just like, you feel like you've been getting consistent care and not having to switch around?
Yeah, I've been seeing the same gastroenterologist, Dr. Prochapin, and by being in his network, he's connected me to, I had a little bit of switching with a gyno, but that was just because of one doctor having left the practice, and now I have a gyno that I really like, and the team I'm working with at NYU for my OBGYN and through my pregnancy has also been really great. And so I do feel very cared for in that sense, and it has felt consistent. And you're totally right. Like, I think so much of my anxiety at the time when I was diagnosed was being 25, being young, still figuring out my career. My relationship status was also very unstable and not supportive. And so it's amazing how much having that has also changed a lot. Work through these things, like to have someone, I'm going to have to eventually possibly have one of the things that makes me like a woman removed. And for him to look at me and be like, that's not what makes you a woman. A wonderful thing. I feel really privileged and really good that I have those things in my life now that I didn't have back in 2018 even, or when I was 25.
Just to follow up on what you said about your OBGYN already thinking about surgeries for you, did he biopsy? Is that something that might be an option for you?
I think I know what you're referring to, because we had earlier, and then we talked about when, like in between children, that I should go back on birth control to help kind of suppress the system, etc. Normal pap smear, my normal kind of screenings for uterine cancer, and then when I'm ready to have children again or have through this process and kind of figure it out from there. But I ultimately, really just decided to, especially since pregnancy is such a scary thing, like for your first time, like navigating it, I really was like, okay, I think for me and where I, kind of what I talked about before, where I'm at, where my family is at financially, and then also where I'm emotionally, mentally, we'll sort of take this route that we're choosing to do. And then, if we ultimately want to make future children, that's something that we can also think about. What was also interesting about this provider, this doctor of mine, is at, I've been seeing a female doctor, female OBGYN for a while, and I really like her, but a lot of times with OBGYN offices, they kind of want you to meet some of the other people in the department just in case you're immediate doctor of birth, so you're not really meeting anybody for the first time. And so this was actually the first time that I was meeting with this doctor this past week, basically. And he was very, very nice and very thorough, which was really great. But he definitely like came in, first of all, in the practice, and then all he immediately saw the Lynch syndrome. And he works with the Kicking, which is a Lynch syndrome nonprofit. Yep. And so he was like, oh yeah, like I've spoken with him before. He's such a nice guy. And so I think there was a little bit of like, oh, like I know a little bit about this. Wanted to sort of catch up with me in terms of like understanding what my process has been and what my experience has been. So he asked about my screen, that a little bit about my family history, which is when I talked to him about having a pretty high risk of uterine cancer and stuff like that. Have you talked to anybody about preventative surgery into the whole conversation. I don't know. So I've had some of those conversations with my other OBGYN, especially at the beginning when we different screenings I wanted to do now that I was pregnant. But then beyond that, it's mostly just been about how are you feeling? How's the baby's health? You know, from like ultrasounds and stuff like that. So this was the first time that I was having like my OBGYN again kind of bring up the Lynch syndrome, because we hadn't really talked about it the last like few visits, because it really was just getting through the second trimester and then making it to the third trimester.
Do they think about in the same way that you're thinking about it?
Yeah, I turned to my mom and my aunt a lot as we were making these decisions about having children, to really get their perspective, especially my mom, who, like I said, felt so bad about it. I talked to her about, you know, I'm afraid that I'm going to feel bad about it. And they were both, first of all, they're both so over the moon excited about my future grandbaby. And they're also, you know, it's really expensive. You've been able to live a normal life. That's not to say that you haven't had to endure certain challenges and make certain decisions and to make certain face certain challenges. But if the finances of it are going to prevent you from having kids, that doesn't, they basically were like, not to have children. And so, you know, it was, that was kind of their mental, and also my mom saying things like kind of what I was saying before of like, you know, I could have chosen not to have you, and that would have been terrible for not just me, but also for the world. And like saying that's kind of how I think about it. So
too,
that's kind of how I think about it. And too, and again, this is coming from the perspective of like someone who's like very listen about options and things like that. Like, you know, I really believe in people's ability to make decisions for themselves, and also acknowledging like how hard it is to, especially when you really do want to have a baby, and you want to have a healthy baby, have a healthy, or, you know, or birthing parent to not only carry that pregnancy if you're choosing to do that, but also to be able to raise that baby. So they gave me lots of advice, ultimately told me it's completely my decision. And, but they were very ecstatic when I told them that I was pregnant, because it also did happen pretty quickly. we had talked about these things even before we got married and had started to, because we also knew that if we were going to go the IVF route, that it was going to be a long process. And so we wanted to start all of that pretty quickly. And so when we did, and then when we heard about, you know, our circumstances around insurance and coverage, and then kind of talking through it together, and then also with our families, we, you know, ultimately decided to start trying. And
yeah,
and then it all just happened really fast.
It's funny, the insurance piece. I wonder, when you were talking to your insurance, did the question of infertility come up, like one of those areas where, if you actually had infertility issues, that part of what you would need would actually be covered by insurance, or did you not kind of get into that?
I looked into that a little bit because I was curious, and I don't remember exactly what it said, but I think it did say something around some proportions could be covered, but it was also like, from what I remember, like, you really had to prove infertility. Like, it was just, like, not as easy as, like, just a doctor signing off. It was, like, going to be, like, a whole nother long, drawn out process. So in general, it felt like my coverage was definitely not supportive of like IVF really, in any case. Although there probably were some rules around like, it, you know, for infertility, but that a lot of it was not going to get covered, which is just really sad, honestly, because I also have so much sympathy for folks who have such a hard time having biological children if they want to have biological children, and issues with infertility. Like, it's just, it's really criminal the way that this country in general handles anything related to women's health, to childbearing, to upsetting, honestly, or even childcare, any of that stuff.
Yeah, I wonder, you've been working in social justice for a long time now, and I'm wondering how, or like, did your dad, before you got your diagnosis, your family experience of Lynch syndrome change or shift your perspective at all on the social justice issues that you work in? Like, you see, is it very often relevant to the work you've done?
Yeah, I think so. I thankfully was always raised pretty, you know, pro-choice and raised to equality, equity, and especially like women's issues in general. That's definitely because I had such a, you know, a pretty strong mother figure, and then also a pretty strong figure in my aunt as well, as like two committed to raising me, in addition to my father and others, obviously. But I do think that after receiving my Lynch syndrome diagnosis, or like really just not just my experience, but also talking to so many people who have gone through similar experiences or had to face similar challenges or think about different things, it really has opened my eyes up to how many things are so interconnected. Like, for example, I used to work for a nonprofit that was focused on affordable housing. And now I work for a nonprofit that's focused on criminal justice. And I've kind of sporadically worked via either writing about or doing freelance communications work with other types of social justice causes around reproductive rights, around racial justice, around similar interconnected issues. And they really all are just so intertwined. For example, like in this country, we have such a terrible mortality rate, like not a coincidence with racial justice, and there's so many other things that just have these crazy adverse effects on our society, on who's able to live a comfortable and free life. And so the more that I continue to not just be aware of these issues, but also advocate, it's in the form of my day job or with these interpersonal conversations, and the better. And I hope that I hope that, you know, I can also raise my children to feel the same way, to feel to different types of people facing different.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me again. You're already making me think like, oh, I want to have people on more than twice, because I'm wondering just like how your perspective will change once your daughter is actually here. And like if Lynch syndrome is something that's going to be kind of front of mind or back of mind, or if you'll just be like the reality of her will be so front and present with like other issues that just come up that you don't, like, nobody's quoted you a risk number for. Like sometimes when I was working more in prenatal counseling, I think like, I don't know, if people like upfront, people are like, well, here's the risk, even just like general population risks for cancer and, social issues, like what is the chance based on your zip code for these various birth defects? It's like, people would be like, I don't know if I should do this.
Yeah, that was another thing too, actually, that we had talked about, like, for example, my aunt is going through lung cancer right now, which is very unfortunate and scary. But it's actually not related to her Lynch syndrome. It's related to the fact that she used to smoke and other environmental factors, which is really interesting. I'm sure maybe Lynch syndrome plays a part somehow just because of her genetic predisposition to cancer, but technically no, right?
Yeah, and maybe genetic factors we don't understand, and then randomness, like bad luck, you know, like most things we don't understand, but then there's something like Lynch and it's like, oh, but we can put a number on this and pinpoint it, creates this like opportunity, but also pressure to make decisions around it.
Totally. That's a really good way to put it.
When is your baby due?
Beginning of May, May 6th, which is exciting and crazy. And oh my God, it feels like it's really coming up now.
If you'd like to share your story, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com. Patient Stories is an ad-free podcast and is unaffiliated with any genetic testing laboratories. We would like to keep it that way. To support the podcast with a donation, visit graygenetics.com/podcast/donate. If you would like to dig deeper into the professional issues raised by these patient stories, for $5 a month, you can join the Patient Stories Club. To sign up, look for the link in the podcast notes for this episode or visit graygenetics.com/podcast.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendation.